Rise Up Chorus presents Meet the Musicians, a podcast dedicated to exploring the amazing stories of musicians from all across the industry. And now, here's your host, Matthew Lapine.
Welcome to the 15th episode of Meet the Musicians podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Lapine, and I'm thrilled to be leading you through a musician's story. I know that I've mentioned this before, but I can't say it enough. Thank you for being loyal listeners to Meet the Musicians. I'm so proud of how quickly this podcast has grown and the listeners who continue to follow all we do. Please be sure to tell all of your friends about Meet the Musicians so that we can further grow our listening community. We want everyone to be part of the story. I'm so proud to again welcome guest host Helen Kernizan to Meet the Musicians. Helen is a longtime friend and youth chorus director at Rise Up Chorus. This episode is the next episode in our series discussing issues of race with professional, classical musicians and music educators of color. The conversation that you are about to hear is inspirational, and I hope that it leads to action in our music community. Helen's guest is B.E. Boykin, an incredible composer, pianist, and conductor. Now, here is Helen Kernizan in her interview with B.E. Boykin on Meet the Musicians.
Hello, today I have with me Brittany Boykin, also known as B.E. Boykin. And thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate you coming out and giving your time for us.
Yeah, of course. Glad to be here.
I'm going to just give a little bio on you.
Okay. Feel free to skip all that stuff.
We'll get right into the questions. We should, because I'm gonna bug it, like a short one.
Okay.
So that people can get a little bit but so those people who don't know of you or about you, you are an incredibly accomplished woman and you're so young. Aww. And there's clearly nothing but greatness in your future and in your present as well. And with all the amazing things that you have, that you're doing currently in higher education, including pursuing your own PhD, ooh, I am curious, have you found any time to write or arrange, you know, as you did while you were at Spelman and at Westminster?
Yeah, so most of my writing was when I was at Spelman and Westminster. I felt like I had a lot of time. Yeah, I was working on bachelor's and my master's, but I had a lot of time. And once you go into your professional career and you're trying to, you know, figure it out and keep the lights on, it's different and you don't have as much time. So, once I started my PhD, I literally had no time. It was just school, coursework, graduate assistantship. So I tell people all the time, like maybe for the past 3 years before 2020, I hadn't written anything new. The commissions were, you know, I think I was trying to keep them to a minimum. So maybe I did like an art song here and there, but like, you know, new choral pieces or new arrangements, I had no time. And then of course, I also felt like I was trying to still figure out my compositional voice. And so it was just a combination of a lot, no time. And then just trying to figure myself out as an artist and a composer, and the music wasn't coming. And then 2020 happened and I was home like everybody else. And the pandemic happened, a lot of police brutality in the Black community. And I started re-examining myself differently as a composer, as an advocate, as an activists for Black artists, for Black community initiatives. And so it's been different. It's been different since last year.
And, you know, it's really interesting that you mention 2020 being such a unique year. And of course, it was like a perfect storm, right? Of everybody being home. People couldn't turn off the TV, you know, when, you know, George Floyd happened in May. And, you know, it's so interesting because a lot of the work that you first started writing was inspired from, you know, the Negro spiritual and arranging for that. And when I first got introduced to you, I was actually at an NJMEA conference, and a gentleman presented from Georgia, and he mentioned you as a composer of non-idiomatic music. And so, that's when I first started looking into it, and I was like, darn, her stuff's too hard for middle school, but because at that point I had already moved over to middle school, but I told my husband, I said, check her out, see if you can do anything. So that's really cool and interesting. You know, we're products of our life, right?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
At the times. And but I want to go back to the spirituals, and I want to ask you, would you say that it was Spellman, your time at Spellman really inspired you to write and arrange spirituals?
Yeah.
Or was that something that you, talk to me a little bit about that.
Definitely. Yeah. So, I mean, and that's one thing that I want to work on. I don't have a lot of spirituals. So my very first piece that I wrote was Go Down Moses. And that was while I was at Spellman. It was a homework assignment in my composition class with Dr. Kevin Johnson. And literally he told the class to arrange a Negro spiritual. It could be anyone you want. And at that time I picked Go Down Moses. And I turned it in and he was like, okay, well, the Glee Club's going to sing it today in rehearsal, so I hope you're ready. And I was like, what? And then, like, literally, I think that was, like, the initial, like, catalyst that had me interested in writing works for, at least at that time, women's choir. And so because the Spellman College Glee Club was just this beautiful community of Black women and choral singing, I mean, yeah, we sang spirituals, but we also sang classical music. And so it was a lot of, like, Mendelssohn and Brahms, and so I had that kind of good and healthy balance of singing everything. And so that's where the non-idiomatic stuff started to come in later. So I was arranging stuff for Christmas concerts and Omanium, and then I think I set the Coventry Carol. So that's where it started to change a little bit in my catalog. But definitely my time at Spellman was the initial, like, okay, let's look at Negro spirituals and let's explore what that looks like. Yeah.
That's awesome. And I think as an educator, in public schools, so many people, so many white people, non teachers of color, they don't even know where to look because, places like J.W. Pepper, and they're not even promoting, diverse rep. They're promoting their favorite five or whatever. And I love Victor C. Johnson. He writes great stuff for middle school, but he's really the only Black composer. Like, when you open up the page, that's mm-hmm. the only one you find, right? And I love him.
Yeah.
I program, he writes for middle school beautifully. Mm-hmm. He knows their unchanged voices so well. And I think it's so interesting that you are publishing your own stuff. That's awesome. Have you, or is there a place, do you feel that there's a place to get in to places like J.W. Pepper, or do you feel that it's better to do what you're doing? What are your thoughts on that?
I would hope that there's a place, with these major publishers. I would hope that, especially with last year in 2020 and us having this kind of racial reckoning, I would hope that they're going to be more intentional about including composers of color, Black composers. Like, I think it's definitely needed. I am self-published because, at that time, not that that was that long ago, but 5-7 years ago, I felt like I wasn't given that opportunity to kind of have a seat at the table or to kind of be in that space with major publishers. I definitely tried. And I just felt like the doors were closing and no one was willing to kind of give me an opportunity. And I wanted to also protect my music at the same time. And so it kind of just forced me to start my own publishing company in order to do that. So that's how Clavia Press came to be. I felt like, a lot of people weren't giving me the chance.
Yeah, I think it's awesome that you're doing it. Not that you weren't being included over, that's not what I meant. Let me just start. I think that it's amazing because so many people would just, I don't want to say give up, but say, okay, this is not for me. It's just not happening for me. And you were like, no, this music needs to get out there. This, my voice needs to be heard. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I actually have a poster. I'm staring at a poster in the back of my room and it says grit. Yeah. Do you have grit?
Man.
And that to me is like the epitome, you know, like advocating self-advocacy.
Yeah. I mean, what is it? It's like that quote, like, you don't know how strong you are until you have to be. And I think, you know, that's what I was thinking of back then. It's like, you know, I'm not doing this to be some famous composer, you know, like Eric Whitaker or whatever. I'm like, I'm doing it just to kind of protect my music. But I don't think I saw it evolving to this magnitude. It's been an interesting ride.
Yeah. Well, it's incredible. And, you know, if you ever have time, you got to write some stuff for the babies. I said, you better write some stuff for the baby. Stop writing all this college level stuff.
It's funny you said that. I have a piece. Well, actually, it's a spiritual. That's probably my second spiritual for like middle school unison or maybe two part. Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho.
I saw the two part. Yes. I saw the two part.
But there's another one coming that came from the pandemic. And I am trying to work on editing that. It's new, so it hasn't been released yet, but I am working on that. So yes, I'm thinking about the babies. You're coming, I promise.
Yes, awesome. And it's so great because they're, like you said before, I mean, you kind of touched on it, like there's not a lot of awesome literature out there for women, for, you know, the SSA or the SSAA. And it's just so phenomenal because especially when you're dealing with like unchanged voices and, you know, it's just so, and to have the spirituals, you know, because they all have that rich, low bass stuff. But they also have that really super high stuff, which is untouchable for the younger voices.
Yeah, right? There's so many different kinds of spirituals. And, you know, depending on the arranger, it could be different sounds, colors, like, you know, and again, but I think it speaks to the issue of equity. I think the music is out there, but whether or not we have access to it, it's a different problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that is something that I also went to Westminster, which I told you. And my experience at Westminster was very different, or the Westminster I experienced, I should say, is very different from the Westminster you experienced. Brandon was telling me that it was only you and him were the only people of color in the entire graduate program.
I think for the 2 years that we're there. Yeah.
And I'm not saying that it was like hella diverse when I was there, but there was definitely a lot more Black grad students and Black undergrads. And when I was in Jubilee, I was like the only white face. So, and I'm sure that's probably surprising for you to hear, because when you saw Jubilee, it was a different story.
Yeah.
Right. And so, when I was in Jubilee, I studied under Dr. Dumson, and he was the one when I was 18. I mean, he turned me on to, you know, even just the inequity of teaching Black history in school, you know, not even the music piece. I mean, of course, we touched that as well, but, you know, experiencing that, and that's what made me really very passionate about it, even from, you know, from 18 on. And I was like, you know, this is something that I wanted to be a champion of, you know, for my students and, you know, for artists to be able to give a voice. And and so enough about me. Sorry. just wanted to give you a little bit of background.
Yeah. And no, and let me correct. I'm Brandon is right. We were the only two in our class. That was right. Yeah. Okay. So it was just, it was interesting. I mean, I think, you know, Westminster was like my dream school back then. I think I had applied to, you know, four or five different master's programs. But when I auditioned at Westminster and just setting foot on Princeton's campus, like, I was like, oh my gosh, this place is magical. And I felt like I wanted to be there. You know, like, but at the same time, I think I understood that I was there to hone my craft, to learn as much as I could. So I don't think I took advantage of connecting or making as many friends because of the kind of racial, I guess, you know, I don't want to say divide, but it was just like, I literally only had Brandon, and And I had already known Brandon. We were coming from Spelman and Morehouse together.
Right.
So like he and I were already like close. Yeah, but you know, I had like my close circle of friends, James Scheel and like Brandon and, you know, a few other people, but like, that was it. Like I kind of stayed to myself. So it was just different.
Yeah. And that was actually, you kind of already touched on my next question, like coming from a place like Spelman, this amazing, like you said, all women, all black. And then, you know, and you have your brother's school, you know, Morehouse. Yeah. And then to come and to be in Atlanta, right? And then to come to a place like Princeton. And like you said, Princeton, Westminster, it's a magical place to be in a conservatory-like setting as a musician. It's wonderful. But then you have this other piece of being and feeling, rightfully so, like the only one. And what was that? I mean, you kind of already touched on it. If there's anything else you want to talk about.
I mean, honestly, it was a cultural shock. Like, yeah, I wanted to be there, but I felt very much isolated and alone. And so even with that, I think I internalized that kind of pressure. Like, oh, it's a conservatory setting. Yeah, you're here, but you have something to prove because you are the only black woman at the time, the only black woman graduate, you know, in this class. Like I felt the pressure was on and all eyes were on me in a way, even though they kind of weren't, because it was like, oh, okay, you're just here like anybody else. But I don't know. I think when you are kind of in a situation like that, you internalize all of those fears on your own.
I think though that you're justified in those. I don't think you have to, you know, apologize for those. I mean, your perceptions are your perceptions, whether they're accurate or not. But I feel that they are, you know, because the world is the world and people don't even know that they say things that are biased. And,
oh, speaking I was just going to say like, I think sometimes people, you know, get caught up a little bit, not intentionally in their bias or how they see people, but I'm the only black girl or a black woman at the time, and because I'm black, then that means I know about gospel, I know about jazz, I know about all these things because of me being black. And that's not necessarily the case, you know. I'm like, I had to tell people while I was there, like, no, I'm classically trained, like in piano, like I've studied Brahms, Chopin, like classical was my world. So I grew up in a Baptist church, but even my church was not gospel. Like we learned a lot of like spirituals and traditional anthems. So it was interesting to kind of have that dialogue too, because I'm like, why does everybody think I know gospel? But
and especially coming from your background of where you grew up and then where you went to Spelman, and then to come to a place and you're like, it's 20 whatever year, sorry, what year were you?
2011, and I graduated 2013. Okay.
All right, it's 2011, okay? It's not the 80s, it's not the 60s, right? And people are still asking you these questions, and you're like, was that real life? Did that just happen? And I have to tell you, being very naive, I grew up 30 minutes from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that people came from diverse situations. And when I went to Westminster and met people that had never met black people before, I was like, where do you live?
Yeah.
And it just kind of opened my eyes to see. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, a few years before you. That was in 2003. And I was shocked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was very interesting to have to field questions like that. And you know, as a white person, people were saying to me, like, why are you sitting at the black table? I was like, mm-hmm. I am.
Yeah.
Like these are my friends from Jubilee. Like I wasn't like, I'm at the black table. It was like, I relate to these people. We have a common bond through mm-hmm. Jubilee. And you know, this is something, you know, it's just interesting that in 2003 and then in 2011 and 2012 that you're still experiencing. And in 2020 that it took George Floyd to wake up the nation. Like this is something that people have been fighting for since, you know, 1863.
Yeah.
Like
Or just to even like the hierarchy between, you know, majors or disciplines. You know, I felt like everybody was like, ooh, the conductors. And then, oh, there's everybody else. You know, because I was actually on the sacred music side. So it was just very different. Like, I remember my recital, you know, I try to program a little bit of everything, something traditional. I think I did one spiritual and then like a kind of contemporary gospel-like piece. But my program was very mixed. But even with that, like, I think there were a lot of people like, you know, kind of looking down at it because the program was so diverse and it wasn't like, I guess, classical music and a totally classical program like everybody else's. So it was just, it was a very interesting experience.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Sorry, I just want to check my question. I want to
ask. No, you're fine.
Tell me about B.E. Boykin. So now my inkling is it because you don't want people to know you're a woman initially, or is it have nothing to do with anonymity? Tell me a little bit about why you go by B.E. Boykin.
Yeah, so
a composer.
Back when I was trying to get started as a composer and to try to get people to listen to my stuff and edit my things, I felt like, yeah, they were immediately kind of taken aback by my name being Brittany. So they already had their idea of, oh, yeah, I'm good. You know, keep working on it. You know, that's cute. Like, I got a lot of that feedback and I was like, oh, my gosh. You know, people like, oh, you shouldn't be a composer. You should just be a music teacher. Like, you know, you're pretty enough. You could do well with the kids. And I was just like, what? It was just very interesting. Yeah. So I thought, if I went by B.E. Boykin first, if I kind of just, you know, took away Brittany and, not really take it away because it's my name, but yeah, just do the initials, that people would focus on the music first.
Right.
And then, so I did that for a little while, but then I think I just kept it once I decided to do Clavia Press and do the self-publishing thing. And so then now it's different. I feel like I can really own, yeah, me being a woman and me going by B.E. Boykin still, even though it's not, you know, my name. Because even some people are like, oh, well, now you can go by Brittany now because you're established as a composer. And I'm like, well, I think that's the beauty in it all. Like, it's still me. And I think if I want to go by my initials, it's still cool. It still works out. So,
yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, it reminds me of like W.E. Du Bois and Cummings.
Right.
Like, hey, if the initials work for them.
they can work for a woman. They can work for a woman. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'm like,
I think it's awesome.
Let's defy all the gender roles. Let's defy them.
Yes. Yes. So I know you had two arrangements, and correct me if I'm wrong, that were performed by the Spelman College Glee Club while you were a student there. And I can imagine what an honor it must have been. I'm curious, did you have any hand in teaching the music, or did you conduct? Did you teach? Did you accompany?
Oh,
tell me about those experiences.
Yeah, and that's probably my bad. I think I only mentioned two in my bio, but I think, let's see, if my composition class was sophomore year, that was the first piece. I want to say sophomore year till, yeah, graduation, every year I had music being performed by them, whether it was Christmas or tour or something.
That's awesome.
So, but yeah, every time, I think Dr. Johnson allowed me the opportunity to help teach the piece. And then, there are a few times that he let me conduct during performances. So there are a few like clips from like old Christmas concerts where you'll see me as a student conducting. So it was just, you know, it was amazing. And I mean, I think as a young woman at the time, you know, I'm 18, 19, just trying to figure out life, you know, but to have a community like Spelman, to have, you know, a professor like Dr. Johnson to invest and to believe in you and to encourage you, like that's the type of like leadership, mentorship that, you know, I'm hoping that I can give to someone else, because, you know, I didn't see all of that in myself as a woman straight out of high school. I didn't see any of that, but I was just blessed to have teachers and mentors who were pouring into me and encouraged me to, yeah, just be myself, to be the musician that I am. And here we are.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your family. I know you have musicians in your family. Are they formally trained like you? Tell me whatever you want to share about, about them.
No, I mean, both of my parents are musical. Like, we grew up in the church, so it was always like a thing for our family to sing together if we were traveling, you know, to family functions. Like, my dad is a soloist, and our family loves him to sing at family gatherings. But no, they're not trained formally. I know my mom took lessons when she was a child, but I think I'm the only one in our kind of immediate family that has, studied formally. But yeah, everybody's pretty musically inclined. I have some cousins who dabble in music and production. But yeah, I think I'm the only, like, I guess, formally trained musician. But yeah, music's definitely a huge part of my family.
That's awesome. Similar for, you know, everyone in my family's an educator.
Mm-hmm.
They're all English teachers. I'm the only music teacher.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So, yeah. But my dad, I mean, I grew up in the house. It was classical or jazz.
Mm.
And so the first song I ever sang was That's All by Sarah Vaughan.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't, you know, do the vocal gymnastics that she can do, but...
oh, that's funny.
I definitely try.
That's funny.
Not many people can sing like Sarah. So you are doing so many things right now. You are assistant director at Spelman with the Glee Club, right?
Yeah.
You are a director of the Treble Choir at Georgia Institute of Technology. You are interim director of choral activities at Agnes Scott College.
Yes.
And I don't know how you have time for your PhD at Georgia State, but
I don't
you
either.
Must be
but
a superwoman.
I don't either. I'm like, girl, what did you do? But I mean,
what did you do to yourself?
Yeah, what did you do? But this has been my life, for the past couple of years. So
that's awesome. If you ever decide to have kids, it'll be easy because you'll know what no sleep is like, because I'm sure you're living a life of no sleep now.
Yeah. When I tell you I'm so ready to have everything done so I can finally sleep, take a vacation, something like I'm ready for that, because working 5-7 jobs is not. It's not sustainable.
No, it's not. It's not for your mental health.
No,
anything.
No. So
what's the ultimate goal? What's your dream job? What's your dream position? What do you see in your future? What's the vision?
Man, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think I would definitely love to be, you know, full-time tenure track somewhere. But I think I just want to continue composing and seeing where that takes me. I don't know if I have a set idea of what that looks like, because I don't know if I want to do composition full time. Like, I think I love conducting. I love working with choirs of all ages. So I definitely want to keep doing that. But yeah, I don't know. I think I'm just going along for the ride and enjoying it. So we'll see.
So would you say that conducting, so like when you say full-time or full or tenure track type position, would it be as a conductor, a choral conductor, or would you want it?
Conductor. Yeah. If I can teach maybe one or two classes. But yeah, definitely. As long as I'm conducting choir or two choirs, three choirs, I'm cool with that.
That's awesome. So cool. Okay. Let me see. Did I miss anything? Oh, So you studied piano, obviously, from a young age, right? And did you ever envision yourself writing music for The Voice?
No. It's funny, like, again, you know, when you have just such a strong and encouraging community around you, anything is possible. So, I mean, yeah, I started taking piano lessons formally at 10. I think I was 9 or 10. And I just knew I loved music, and my parents knew that I loved music. Like, I was one of those kids where I was practicing every day. My parents didn't have to tell me, you know, if anything, they were telling me, oh, hey, it's time to go to bed. You have homework to do. It's time to get off the piano. Like, I was that kid. But I will say there was a time where I think I didn't practice, and I got my feelings hurt by my teacher at that time, because she just laid into me, you know, was like, what have you been doing? You haven't practiced. It's just sloppy. It's messy. It's all over the place. And I just cried and cried. And I was like, you know what? I don't even like music like that. I'm never going to do music again. Like, I quit piano. I quit music. And there was a whole thing. And my parents just told her, she'll be fine tomorrow. But yeah, I thought I was going to walk away from music, but no, it's been a huge part of me, a huge part of my life. But I don't think I ever knew exactly what that looked like. Like, I just knew I loved music. And again, I just had the support, you know, to kind of have the time. So piano was my thing. So my parents said, go do piano in college. And I said, okay. So Spelman gave me piano performance. Graduated, but I still wasn't sure. I knew I didn't want to be a classical performance and tour the world. So I was like, I kind of like choir. So they're like, okay, well, look at conducting. So then Westminster came, did a little conducting, sacred music, choral studies. But I still was trying to just figure it out. And I think, you know, the lesson is, as long as you know what you love, I think things will always work out because your passion will create room for you. And yeah, you don't have to have everything figured out, but as long as you are led by what you love, that's what's important.
That's true. That's true. So then where you teach, mm-hmm. That wouldn't be a factor for you, or would it? Would you want to be at an HBCU? Would you want to be at a non-HBCU? Is that something that you've thought about?
No, not necessarily. I think as long as it's the right, you know, situation, the right environment, I just love what I do. So there are plenty of opportunities, I'm sure, that would be possible. So, I would be open. HBCU, PWI, it wouldn't matter.
Thank you. I could not remember. Oh, my God.
Oh, PWI.
I can't remember. I'm like, Oh, God.
Yeah.
Mommy brain.
No, anyway, no. Yeah, I would be open. I would be open.
That's awesome. And do you feel that you have a close connection with a voice? Like, do you think that you would ever be inspired or inclined to compose for instrumentally, or do you think like the voice is where you want to live?
I think the voice is where I live, but I am very excited and curious to write more for instrumental works and musicians. So I have like this random clarinet piece with piano that someone played and recorded for me. I think it was like a girl and her sister, and then the recording was great. And I was like, can I just use this as a reference? I think they did this last year during the pandemic. So I was like, oh, that's awesome. But yeah, I'm definitely excited. I would love to eventually write, you know, a big orchestral piece. Like, you know, I definitely have those visions and those goals. But I think, yeah, for right now, voice, choral is kind of where I'm comfortable. So we'll see. I know I think someone asked if I could write some pieces for like band and brass, and I'm open, but that's just something I haven't really had a chance to explore, but I'm definitely open to it.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you're on our side, the choral side.
Yeah.
But obviously I'm biased. You know. Okay. I think that is all that I really wanted to, you know, ask you about. And I'm so excited that you came out, and I'm so glad I got to meet you a little bit.
Yeah, likewise.
Even just briefly. I do have one more question, since you are going to be on the podcast with us. I told you before, the name of our choir is called Rise Up Chorus.
Mm-hmm.
What do the words rise up mean to you?
Well, you know, I'm in Atlanta, so rise up means something different down here. But aside from the Falcons, so that's like the Falcons like slogan, rise up. So Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're all about, I don't know. So yeah, I think maybe that's why I love being here. We have the Atlanta United, Falcons, rise up, being united. But yeah, rise up, I mean, for me, it just means, yeah, being grounded, standing up for yourself, standing up for what's right. You know, but hopefully maybe you have a tribe or a community behind you to do that, so you feel empowered. But yeah, rise up just means, you know, showing up, standing up for yourself, and making things happen.
A big thank you to B.E. Boykin for a look into her life as a musician, and to Helen Kernizan for another fantastic interview. I hope that this conversation and these episodes about race in our musical community help to enact change in our world. A big thank you to our Meet the Musicians listening community. This podcast simply wouldn't exist without you and your incredible support. Please help us to grow our listening community by spreading the word about Meet the Musicians. Share our podcast link through your social media accounts. Tell your friends in conversation about the podcast that they just have to listen to. Help us to make Meet the Musicians a household name. Until next time, this is Matthew Lapine saying thank you so much for listening. We can't wait to have you join us again for our next episode when we meet the musicians.
You've been listening to Meet the Musicians, hosted by Matthew Lapine. This podcast is produced by Rise Up Chorus, a grassroots music organization whose focus is on bringing the community together through singing. For more information about Rise Up Chorus, visit us online at www.riseupchorus.org. Thank you so much for listening, and we can't wait for you to join us next episode when we meet the musicians.